everyone, and welcome to a Wild West Texas podcast known as The Good, The Bad, and The Enlightened. This is episode number 2. Today you got me, Steve, known as Xylar, Clay, the Warpug, and Scott, also known as Honky Toast. We have a special guest with us today, Sean Benson from Outlaw Miniatures, joining us. We have quite a few questions lined up for you today, Sean. How do you guys want to get started?
Let's go ahead and just start talking about lists. I know that's the topic du jour, so let's get jamming.
Yeah, we have Sean is the you're the list maker, right? Of Outlaw right now. You're the rules guy.
I'm the all kinds of stuff, but sure, that's one of the hats I wear.
what's your most prominent hat? What's your main?
My most prominent hat is graphic design. So okay. A lot of the stuff that you see coming out for Wild West Exodus, whether it be the store or the Facebook page or any of that stuff that starts to come together, it's stuff that yours truly pumped out and put up for you to make very it look cool. Pretty.
Very cool.
Awesome.
My big,
it looks very pretty.
Well, thank you. The biggest projects I've been working on lately that'll be very prominent to you guys as Wild West Exodus players is the book, which we've gotten our first copies to check out just recently, and they look magnificent, and the cards. So every time you're playing the game, you'll get to see a little bit of my work.
Very cool. Very exciting. Should anyone have a problem with that, they can get on the Wild West Exodus forums. He is Sean Zor. And you can let him know
wow
how fantastic his work is if you want to butter him up like Steve tried to for more information.
Or you can tell me how much you hate me because the text is too small.
But right now there's only like however many of us active on the forums, so it's probably all love right now.
All right, guys.
So list building.
So who wants to lead us off with the list?
List building.
We can't let Sean go first because he's just going to make us all feel stupid. So we all have to go like excited children, and then he gets to tell us why we're wrong.
You want me to go first?
All right,
you are the most excited child, so go ahead.
There's no doubt. All right, so my list is based around outlaws. The boss I have is Jesse James, which is $200. Frank James is an underboss at $115. I have Cole Younger as sidekick for $75. I have Sasha Tanner as a sidekick for $115. Apache Kid at $100. Then I bought two hired hand heavy weapon, the sniper guys at $45 each. And I bought two long range hired hands at $25 each. Come to a grand total of $745.
Which of the long range did you take?
What's that?
Did you take the wave one or the wave two?
I took the wave one, yes. I took the wave one. 25 points each.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The consistency of my list is I'm going to try to activate Jesse, Cole, and Sasha together. The reason being is that Cole with his smoke bombs can kind of protect a movement of the table. I look at Sasha and Jesse as my close range murderers. They're the guys that's going to get up close and do all my dirty work. They're going to be my boss hunters, sidekick hunters, you know, linchpin hunters. The snipers and Frank James are going to be just put back there to gain board control, kind of, per se, funnel my opponent into areas that are behooving for Jesse and Sasha to do their dirty work. The Apache Kid with his spirit aim will just kind of hide in the background and do what he does with spirit aim. And the other long-range guys, our only reason I chose long-range over the close combat was because I could kind of do both, and I can kind of work some, you know, maneuvering and shooting, while the close combat guys just kind of allowed me to be up close and personal only, in my opinion. So I kind of stuck with having long-range, plus the marksmanship kind of plays into the theme of what I'm trying to do, which is make a ranged attack list, so... That's the short version of what my list is and what it can do. Want to critique it first, Sean?
No, I think one of the cool things about it is that it lends well for the people that do get into the game via the starter sets. It's a nice little build onto it. I mean, you're gonna be coming out of the gate with at least Jesse, Frank, and Younger, and then, you know, those wave one hired hands. So then getting two heavy weapons, Sasha and Apache Kid, you're going to kind of round out that list, and you're able to get into it at a relatively inexpensive way instead of necessarily like having to piecemeal it. So it's good in that fact. And those of you that have gotten to do demos with the outlaws, you know, that's definitely who you're playing as. Is you're playing as Jesse, Frank, and Younger. So you know, it'll be something that's very familiar. I like it too because it is it's playing into the idea that outlaws kind of they're not so much about that sort of overall synergy, but they're more about the guy by guy synergy. So knowing that you have a little bit of a game plan where you want to activate Jesse, Frank, and Sasha to kind of like help push certain board control aspects of the list and push their list into sort of your advantageous position, while still also keeping it open for the fact that if you needed to, you could activate each of those guys separately to fulfill either a denial sort of activation or just getting a really advantageous activation where you're able to clear three or four guys of your opposition to get an area. And Apache Kid is always just a good little add-on into the outlaw mix because, you know, with that spirit aim, especially with that spirit charge or the spirit bow, you have kind of those two options. So he's always kind of a utility kit in the fact that he can start plinking away at low armor stuff, or he can put some damage into the high armor stuff and have it actually connect and do some damage.
Yeah, he also seems to be good at close combat as well with his, he has two strikes and two tomahawks, correct?
And so when you're doing your strikes in close combat and you've got, I mean, I guess you can divvy it between. So he's got four.
So you choose between the weapons, and if you have two of that weapon, it then multiplies by your strikes. But then if the other weapon, you know, most of the time it's you're choosing a higher number of lower power or a lower number of higher power with the ones that have multiple weapons. No, he does have two tomahawks, so yeah. He's got four strikes altogether in melee at power 8, so against moderately armored or no armored guys, he's going to definitely be able to connect with some damage.
Wait, so you're saying yeah. if you got something where you've got two of a weapon, like if you have two tomahawks and you had four strikes, yeah. Does that mean 8 attacks?
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay, that's great. Okay.
So, why Geronimo and Sitting Bull are amazing.
That's it. That's a whole new level of ridiculous. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay.
So like with them, if you're on that outer halo for them, so you know like for Sitting Bull that 3-inch or Geronimo that 2.5. They're striking. If you're spending an action point to do melee attacks, you are striking with their claws, which they have two of on right. each of them, with their strikes of 3 apiece that they're doing 6. And then, you know, you're able to divvy that up between all those guys as well.
That's crazy. That's so crazy.
Yeah. It's definitely crazy, but one of the things that...
That's awesome. It's just...
We'll talk about Warrior Nation when it comes to Warrior Nation, but there's a lot of things to say about it. So, Outlaws. Which Apache Kid used to be part of the Warrior Nation, we know, but he has definitely found his place in the Outlaws. He's kind of a little disgruntled, a little disenfranchised with the Warrior Nation, as it may be.
Yes. And the reason why I chose Cole Younger is, and I'm going to kind of go down some of the models and why I chose him, why I like him. Cole Younger is really cheap at 75 points.
Mm-hmm.
He has a marksmanship of 4 and has two really good pistols.
Mm-hmm.
They're a rate of fire of 2, and he has 2 pistols. So for each action point as well, he's shooting 4 times
yep.
with a range 18, power 10. Sure. And then he has a smoke grenade on top of it. So, yeah, he's insanely good for 75 points, in my opinion. I don't know how you don't play that guy.
Yeah.
Jesse James is what Jesse James is. He's just a murdering machine. There's just no other way to describe him. He has so much that he can do. Last laugh is awesome. You kill him and he gets one last shot. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that he can use his heat blast with that one last shot, correct?
He can. Yeah, as long as it is not something where, like, it's not in a melee situation, you know?
Even with close work, would that allow him still to do it because he can use his ranged weapons in close combat?
So one of the things with close work is that for him, it's different because he can only use his pistols. So it's as his pistols.
Okay. So yeah. Even though the heat blast is his pistols, he's just using his pistols alone. He doesn't get the heat blast. Right. Okay.
And actually, hold on. Let me look at heat blast real quick because I think there is one other caveat.
On this one.
Actually, sorry. With last laugh, he can't use his heat blast ammo because it's during activation. And last lap is an out of activation thing.
What if he dies on his own activation?
If he dies on his own activation, he still doesn't get it because last lap is still an out of activation thing that's happening.
That makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good. But yeah, Jesse. I mean, he's insanely good, I think. I mean, I was really trying to do a Billy the Kid list, mm-hmm. and every time I was doing one, I came back to, I just think Jesse James is that much better for the points. But, I mean, everyone's going to have their opinions on where they come up with that. For me, it was just, I think Jesse's just superior for the point cost. So that's why I chose Jesse. Frank is what Frank is. Frank is just a sniper who is literally probably just going to annihilate people at range, and it's going to be hard to deal with at times. Because mm-hmm. even on the lookout, I mean, if I understand this correctly, anytime you spend an action point, he gets to immediately, if you're on the lookout, shoot you.
So he gets to, so if he's on the lookout, not anytime. It's, he is, he can do it once per turn. He's not.
Right, but I mean,
yeah.
As soon as someone spends an action point, he can trigger on the lookout.
Right. In his, as long as he's got field of view to you.
But correct. It's can trigger, it's not must trigger, right? So he can he can choose not to. He can wait for it.
He can choose.
He can wait until that right time comes where there's that guy that's got maybe four or five lifeblood left and just, like, pop him out of there.
Right on.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not a must. It's a can, but it can only trigger once per turn.
And then the snipers. Where do I start with these guys?
So broken.
45 points. Holy moly. That is so cheap. 30-inch range, 11 power, armor piercing. They can actually spend, because of how their sniper training, they can actually spend an action point in their activation to reload if they shot on the lookout, or they can spend an action point in aim and then go on the lookout for free.
Mm-hmm.
With a marksmanship of 5, they can aim, 30-inch range. The only thing they're missing is accurate, but I guess they can't have everything for 45 points, right?
Yeah.
The downside to them is 0 armor, 6 lifeblood. Mm-hmm. So you pretty much, I'm going to have to hide them in cover and give them some protection that way. But they just, I can't say enough about those guys. Those guys are insanely well. And I really wanted to spam 6 of them out into my list.
See, he's the spammer. He's the spammer, Sean.
I am that guy.
It's all good.
I am that guy.
He's going to be the guy with Gordon in 3 Earthbreakers, and he's going to be the guy with, just anything he can take the most of.
This is the guy that's going to have all 9 of his heavy support or of his light support are all Iron Horses with rocket pods.
Yeah, this will be me. I mean, I do play Epic Dagrosh with 18 Shredders. I'm just saying.
Yep, he's that guy.
I am that guy. So, yeah, I mean, I look at those guys, and I just want to spam them out. I mean, and I reframed very much, guys, from spamming them out on these lists. I did. Yeah. Because I thought about taking away the hired hands and having 3 snipers and done ditching Apache Kid and bringing in 2 more. And, yeah, so I came really close, but I decided to go ahead and try to make at least somewhat of a well-rounded list. But that pretty much sums it up. Like I said, I think some of the strengths of this list is I got good range. Mm-hmm. If I can manage to get Sasha and Jesse into their ranks, those guys are going to do some seriously good work. Oh, I forgot to cover Sasha.
Yeah,
I should bring that guy up. Sasha Tanner, one of the backer models. This guy is just a melee beast at a physical ability of 4. He has chain blades and he has his hand blades. And chain blades are basically a ranged weapon that you can pull somebody to you if you hit a small base, mind you. You can pull a small base model to you. But he has 2 hand blades with 3 strikes. So he gets 6 strikes per activation point or action point. You know, not incredibly fast at 5, but, you know, if this guy can get to you, it's gonna be brutal. There's no doubt about it. Those hand blades are power 8, not the best. They have infected blades, which are going to help. So, yeah, he's really good. I went ahead and went with Sasha just because I figured I can get Jesse and Sasha up in close range and do what they do best.
And one thing to note, too, about Outlaws is a lot of times when you look at it kind of as an overall, you'll notice they don't have a huge amount of influence. They generally are, you know, packing 1 or 2 characters with a decent amount, but they aren't, like, spread nearly as much as other factions kind of have. You know, like, here's a guy with 1 influence, here's another guy with 2 influence, here's a guy with 1 influence. You know, in this list, you've got Jesse that's coming in with 4, you've got Sasha with 1, you've got Apache Kid with 2, and then Frank and Younger have no influence that they're adding to it, which is good and bad in the fact of it's useful. You know, that Jesse's influence, Apache Kids, is useful. But as you spend it and as they die, you're not being affected as much. Because, you know, like, as models die and other factions, you're having to pay the piper in the fact of, you know, you may have spent some influence, and then now they die, and now you've also got to pay that influence back anyway. So you're starting to lose more out of your pool. Whereas, you know, like, if Frank dies or if Younger dies, it has no influence. It has no effect on your influence pool because they aren't offering it in the first place. They can still use it, but that way when they die, they're not then also having to pull it back away, too.
Rules of correction. Ding, ding, ding. Frank James gets one influence in that, remember? It's not on the thing, but he should have it.
Okay, fine.
So, correction has been made.
Correction has been made. Ruling on the spot. Ruling from above. Frank. Okay, so
Frank gets one. Who's this making this rule correction?
I've constantly forgotten that change, so just change it now so we don't forget it.
Is this Robert?
Hello.
Hello. Hello. That's Romeo.
Who was that?
That's Romeo.
Outlaw.
Romeo. Outlaw. That's Outlaw. Back there. Outlaw so with Frank his information the Outlaws.
Yep. Outlaw is
fixing. I will change my spreadsheet right now.
Frank gets one.
It's one.
So I'll change that on my spreadsheet. But that brings me to a very good point, Sean. Thanks. I almost forgot about my influence pool and how I decided I was going to use them within my faction. For outlaws, at least my interpretation of, or at least how I would view to use them, I'm going to use them for shooting and damage output.
Yeah.
While, like, when I played Warrior Nation, because that's who I mostly did through the beta, mm-hmm. the playtesting was Warrior Nation, I used it pretty much exclusively for armor saves for them.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I mean, it's such a fine line that you have to walk with it on whether you feel like you need it for your defensive abilities or whether you just push it out there to make all your offensive abilities hit.
You know, yeah, and I look at it as you can use to either boost your strengths or to help mitigate your weaknesses. And for Warrior Nation, I use it to mitigate the weakness just because mm-hmm. they have to get there.
Yeah,
you know, their real, at least in my opinion, their real ability is getting into close combat and doing their damage there.
Yeah.
While outlaws, I use it for their strength because I really think that their strength is alpha damage, just producing a whole bunch of damage quickly and, you know, in great abundance. So I was using it only to boost that so I could help them play more to their strengths than necessarily to, you know, mitigate their weaknesses.
So there's the outlaws. I like it.
All right.
All right. Are we
done with your list, Scott?
Yeah. Why don't we move to yours, Steve?
All right. I chose lawmen for my list, and let me run through it real quick. I was torn because I was torn between two different versions, and I'm going to go with my fun version. That's probably not as competitive.
All right.
But Wyatt Earp at 205 is my only boss choice. Judge K. Stern at 110, three Enforcer bots at 80 points apiece, and Interceptor at 80 points, and then I threw in Sasha Tanner as well. And I did not know that Scott was bringing Sasha when I wrote this.
Yeah, we did do it in secret, guys, or kind of in secret, but...
Yeah, but basically, I don't see this being quite as competitive, but I really wanted Judge K. Stern because I really just want a Godzilla mode... My games of Wild West Exodus.
And so explain what you mean by Godzilla mode.
This guy can light buildings on fire with his gun and can also just walk up and hammer them down. I mean, he's carrying a hammer as big as he is. It's just incredibly fun. And I know I touched on this in the last podcast, but I'm really looking forward to those optional rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the three UR30 Enforcer bots, those are the really, you know, workhorses of the list. Mm-hmm. With three action points apiece. Is that right, Sean?
Yep.
They're so good.
So one thing you'll notice about the lawmen, and this is like a design characteristic of them, is that they're generally slower for action, right? But they got bumped up action points. And so the idea with them is that you have choices that you have to make a lot, a bit more than some of the other factions mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, so I'm going to use one of my action points to move. Well, with them, you know, pretty much the highest speed of any of the guys in that whole army is Doc Holliday, right? But then you've got Wyatt Earp, you've got the UR30 Enforcer bots, you got Judge Stern, they've all got low quickness. They're not, you know, super fast guys that are running across the table. And so, you know, when you do get to the point where you're starting to get in there and start doing combat, like, you do have a bit more action points, but then you also kind of want to be using some of those action points as move actions, so you're getting forward echelon, and you're really playing to that strength of them being able to be high armor, tank up a little bit, and deal with the damage, too. Because if you just run them off and have them be solo, they're not playing with that extra strength of being able to be with other Lawman characters, getting that plus two armor, and being stronger.
Yeah, and basically the entire goal of the army is just slowly move them across the table shooting. And then I was planning on pairing up with each UR30 Enforcer bot, you know, either Judge or Wyatt or Sasha, to give them company as they walk across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Although Sasha doesn't grant the forward echelon, yeah, so I have to do that.
And it doesn't actually, I don't think, translate to the UR30 as well, correct?
What's that? The UR30
is... Sasha is base with...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I'm actually mixing up my other list, which is probably a little more competitive, but it isn't Godzilla mode, so it's not as much fun.
Yeah, Godzilla mode's going to be fun, by the way, I think.
Right. You know,
I love the optional rules, and we were kind of talking about this before the podcast. I really think that I'm only going to play with the optional rules as far as playing pickup games with people and stuff go, because I just love the optional rules with civilians and building destruction.
Oh, those aren't even optional to me. Those are just, that's part of the game.
Well, I know. They're not optional to me either, but
yeah.
People, they're optional in the rule book, but it's not going to be an option.
Yeah.
They're just included. They just make the game that much better, in my opinion. So,
so it's so cinematic. You know, I mean, that's thing about it is that it's just so cinematic to have your guy come up and smash that building and try and take those guys, you know, put the other guys in a situation where they're not nearly as advantageous as they used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so Steve, explain why he's Godzilla mode. What makes him specifically Godzilla mode for the listeners?
Okay, for people who haven't had a chance to really study Judge K. Stern, he's got a jury pistol, which is a one-handed pistol, power 9, range 14 inches, rate of fire 2, with the fire special rule on it. So he can literally shoot people and set them on fire, which is just so cool. He can also walk up and slam you with his hammer, which is a two-hand melee weapon, 2-inch halo, power 11, with armor piercing and bell ringer.
Mm-hmm.
And the armor piercing allows you to damage buildings as well. So
that's, so that's fire. Cool. And so does his pistol. He can set the buildings on fire with his pistol.
Yep, he can set the buildings on fire with his pistol and knock it down with his hammer.
And the other important thing to note about fire is the fact that it causes courage checks as well. So you're
absolutely courage check. Yeah. That's a good, great point.
Yeah.
See, this is why you're on the show, Sean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And with
hope this amateur's out.
And he's putting out 4 hammer hits a turn with his 2 strikes and 2 action points potentially.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's a beast. Fortunately, only 5 up physical ability, but you know, it's still better than average.
5 up, 60%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's 60%, which is pretty good. And that's why you have influence.
Yeah, Geronimo and Abe Lincoln just have me, you know, spoiled.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, looking at that too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though they both went to the 3 up.
Yeah, instead of 2 plus, which they had before.
3 up now, really? Oh, that's okay. I haven't looked at both
of them yet. Yeah, both used to be 2 up.
Yeah. Well, I think having that fail state's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Even though as playing Warrior Nation, I really want the 2 plus. 3 plus is probably a more fair and competitive way to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I took the Interceptor so I can help control the board a little more since these guys are so slow, to help force choices and do a little bit of board control. And Sasha is there to just fill in all of my close combat needs, just because as you touched on all the awesome abilities that Sasha has.
Yeah.
And it's great with that little bit slower aspect of the Lawman. You have something that can kind of be like, can bring something to them. You know, like, I want to take out this piece of my opponent's army, and Sasha is going to go up and either kill it himself or can bring it on so everybody else can deal with it too.
When Sasha pulls somebody and it comes into someone else's halo, does that person get a free strike?
No. So if you notice on Sasha Tanner, there's a little bit about that rules interaction in that rule where it states that it ignores the halos on the way in.
Oh, boo.
That makes sense.
So so when it's coming in, it's being affected by terrain as normal, but it's not being affected by other models' halos.
So if I pull someone off a roof, are they still going to take falling damage?
Yes.
That's all that matters. He wants to pull them off the
building. Exactly.
Yeah. And then push them back into the building that he set on fire and then drop it with his hammer.
That's exactly how I'm playing the game. I don't really care about winning. I just want to create as many of those fun scenarios as possible. Yep.
I want to create havoc and chaos on the table as much as possible.
Things are just going to be set on fire all over the place. Buildings are going to be knocked down.
We want to make memories, not win tournaments.
Well, and sometimes you'll win by making memories.
Exactly.
Occasionally. So true.
It'll be totally, one of the things that we love so much about the game is that you can finish pretty much any old game, and there's like a story to tell about it, right? Where you're just like, okay, so there's this one game I played, and I pulled a guy off of a roof, pushed him into a burning building, and then, you know, dropped the building on his head, pretty much with Judge Stern and a couple other dudes doing stuff, and you can be like, that's just so cool. And it's just awesome.
Some of my favorite games I've ever had, even in competitive play, comes down to some crazy story that happened within the game. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about this game, is it's filled with, in my opinion, with those moments.
It's built around crazy stories.
Yes.
That's pretty much my list, and like I said, it's not very competitive, I don't think, but we also don't have that many choices just yet for Lawman. Mm-hmm. The UR-30s are probably and Wyatt are probably the core of the army. UR-30s having three action points each on the UR-30s is just insanely good with two armor in the forward echelon.
And they have accurate too, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Range 18, power 7, rate of fire 2, and 2 blasters.
Yeah, they're 50-50 at 18 inches no matter what. Mm-hmm.
I believe if they stand still and shoot with all three action points, that's 12 shots coming out of them, which is just crazy. Yeah.
Actually, 12 shots. Yeah, 4, 3 action. Yep, 12 shots. That's crazy good.
Yep. Just hopefully you don't get shot by interference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how does that play into them? What happens to them if they get...
If they get shot by interference, they suffer +2/+2 to their... marksmanship, physical ability rules.
Oh, it's on there. It's on there. Yep. Special rules there.
Yep.
Okay, I see it. I guess I could have read and answered my own question, huh?
And then they can't get forward echelon either. So if you interfere them, they're now 8+8+, and then they can't get the forward echelon bonus.
Yeah, another good reason for the Wraith in your list.
Yep, bring the Wraith, that spray template right across them. Pop, pop. Yeah. And that's one of the things, too, is that, in making the Lawmen... And with all these factions, you'll see there's things that they benefit from within themselves, but then there's also other things that can play as a counter to it. It's great to be in forward echelon and be +2 armor, but against some lists, you can't make full use of that, and instead you have to make full use of how many action points that you have, right? So if being in base-to-base means that you're more susceptible to an army that has blast weapons, well, then maybe you're not playing the forward echelon game as much as you're trying to stay spread out and use those action points to really maximize what the army's about instead of just being hit by, power 10, power 12 blast weapons all game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually me and Steve were talking about that. That's one of the things where, especially just Lawmen in general, you're going to have to be very apt to knowing when to get into forward echelon. Mm-hmm. When you're in the open and you don't have really any ability to hit cover, then forward echelon is going to be a great advantage for you. But you also should still look for cover for the most part, mm-hmm. because they have good armor values just right off the bat.
Right.
I mean, just
amazing most of the time with the forward echelon.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, even when, there's cover, I'm in the open, I can hit by blast, maybe just heading for cover and staying out of the forward echelon would be a good choice just because your armor's still good and now they can't, necessarily take advantage of their blast weapons against you, so... Yep. I think Lawmen has some good utilities. I think looking at them, it's a faction that right now is going to be my main faction that I play.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not the main faction I talk about on the podcast, so that I can leave Steve to talk about them. I'll talk about Warrior Nation because that's my second one. But I really like the toolbox they have at their availability to them. Yep.
And you'll see, like, as Judgment comes out and things like that, like, there, and, you know, as further releases come out for Lawmen, you'll see even more utility come out of it. You know, because, you know, overall with the Lawmen right now, this is their effective, you know, first wave of releases that you're seeing, and it's, you know, what we've built in to see what utility is there right now, and then there will be continuing utility. But same with all these factions. Every faction in the game is going to gain more utility over time, just in general. So
I'm going to do something I do best, which is sidetrack the conversation. You talked about the Judgment. I know, guys, right? you talked about the Judgment. Why isn't the Heavies have the rules up on the webpage yet, by the way?
So the Heavies are not up on the webpage. The reason being for that is we have one final set of finalization for some of the rules in there, and we don't want to put out one of them or two of them. We want to put them all out at the same time, and especially like with the Judgment and all that, we don't want to rush any of the heavy support aspect of it, because we don't want to be like, hey, here's all this, and then be like, oh, we actually have to change, you know, this thing or that thing. We're just making sure that it is exactly 100% how we want it to be. And it's just been a lot of playtesting, rolling dice, but then we have, you know, one or two more finalizations of rules that we need to be 100% on. And we don't want to be like, here's this thing we're 100% on. Actually, just kidding. We were only 90% on it or whatever. So you'll get all of them as one lump set of here's all the heavy support, here's all their rules, check them out. Especially, too, because of making sure that we feel good about all of it cross-factionally as well. You know, okay. for the Doomsday that is going to be in the Law, or in the Enlightened and in the Outlaws, for, you know, the Ironhide that'll be cross-factional.
Right.
For the, you know, we were able to feel really good about the Interceptors, you know, as they came out for Outlaws, but we just, yeah, with the heavy support, we're just 100%ing it. And with the introduction of the rail ammo on the Judgment, that'll be the first model in the game that has rail ammunition, mm-hmm. Making sure 100% that we aren't putting something in there that just makes the game unfun to play against that Judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much one thing you'll probably see with the rail ammo, because of the general nature of it, is it pretty much is going to cap out at power 10 ever. So you're not going to mm-hmm. see stuff come into the game with like a power 14 rail ammo, and you just be like,
I win.
And for those of you that aren't familiar with rail ammo, you draw a line off the point that, it, you know, coming off that model, you target it somewhere. The things that are in that line get hit by it, and it reduces the armor value of that model to zero when it is hit by it. So if it was power 14, you would have a base armor of zero and a power 14 coming against you, which is why the power 10 is basically the max on it, is, you know, because you have that dice roll that you can mitigate it with, yeah. And it's always just that dice roll.
Wow.
Steve, you all right? You need to go change your pants or anything? You okay?
I do.
Okay, so we can continue. Does if we go back on topic, does this make it my turn, or are we going to?
Yeah, it does. It does indeed make it your turn.
my sad little list that I've built, hearing you guys talk about it, I'm like, uh-oh, they've gotten real technical in here. I like pretty models and making buildings blow up, so we'll see how this works.
It'll probably be plenty competitive based on that fact, then.
I hope so.
We like pretty models in this game and doing some stuff.
And I guess I don't know if we've noted so far that we're all building 2 750, because that's the general medium standard level. Is that, would you call it?
I would say that this is, you know. So when this game comes to the point where we're doing organized play, we'll have various different levels of the game where you're coming into it, whether it's like closer to like a 500 point list, and then there'll be that sort of like midline, like 700 feet-ish list in that area. And I think 750 is actually a good point to really start playing the game after you've gotten past your introduction games. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see more than likely in roughly in the 1250 range being that sort of tournament list.
Yeah, where, I found 750 surprisingly restrictive.
Yeah, 750 is still restrictive. Yeah, totally. Especially when you see, you know, like the bosses are running in the 200 range, and then, yeah. You know, you start to add all these things, and you're like, I don't have, you know, I only have maybe like 5 to 10 models, but then you add that other 500 points, and then that's where those other models start to come in. Because like that 500 point list is like boss, underboss, sidekick. Like, right. You know, the reason why that exists and that will exist as a thing will be that sort of like, you know, 3-4 guys showdown against each other, where that's what you're playing as. We may even like put a restriction in there of the only things that you can take are either bosses, underbosses, sidekicks, in a 500 point list. And then 750, you'll open it up and we might say a restriction of like, cannot take heavy support in a 750 point list. And then at the 1250, everything's open. So
that makes sense. I wanted so bad to have a big, pretty Doomsday driving around in my list, but I just couldn't justify it at 750.
Right. On one side, it's like hard to justify. On the other side, at 750, it's hard for people to have all the answers to it too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
well, I had
you're
no
not
one to carry. If I took it, it didn't have anybody to drive around. So
right. You're just using the weapons and the armor of it at that point. Yeah. Of just being like, can you kill this model? Yeah. Maybe not. So if you can't kill this model, I just get to drive around and, you know, take objectives or whatever it may be.
Right.
So if you, you know, when it comes down the pipeline, seeing something at like a 750 point level saying like heavy support is not part of that list building, it wouldn't be that surprising just to keep it so it is a fun competitive format, and having it so it's not so much of like rock, paper, scissors. It's more of like taking the right things to deal with different situations, but not having to take super specific things, because vehicles and that general thing you'll see in list building, there are definitely pieces in the game that are more suited at taking out vehicles than other things.
Right.
You know, things like thermite rounds, things that, you know, are able to put that damage
rocket
into.
Rocket pods, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Rocket pods, yeah. Kyle the Black. With the can opener.
Yeah.
Open in cans. Yeah. Things with spirit edge, or not spirit edge. Pretty much things with thermite rounds and things that do have special abilities that affect armor directly. Armor piercing is good, but it's not going to be crazy effective against most of the heavy support since they're dealing with a little bit higher armor. Thermite rounds are going to be the best bang for your buck against heavy support.
Cool. Okay.
So armor piercing doesn't take heavies to armor zero?
Armor piercing is a -2.
Oh, -2.
Yeah. So armor piercing is a flat -2 against the armor. And so if you're dealing with like an armor 6 or 7 heavy support, it's only taking it down to 5. And so it still can be mitigated rather successfully. Whereas if you're taking that 7 armor down to 4, and then most of those thermite round weapons are relatively high power as well, so then you're able to put a decent amount of hurt into it.
So I don't remember seeing this in a rule book, but is there a specific section where it talks about if you have odd numbers, do you round up or round down always, or how does that
work? Yes, so there is a rounding section in the rulebook, and I'm actually going to grab this rulebook. I will even give you the big rulebook page for it. I know you guys...
Because I feel like I remember there being a specific incident that gives you instruction to round down.
So, and it's relatively early, if I remember correctly.
Page 215.
Wow, Steve's on top of it.
So sometimes you have to divide the die roll. Roll the die and divide the result by the number indicated, rounding results up to the next whole number. But when you're doing movements or ranges, they're never rounded off. Use the exact result. So if you have a 3.5, it goes to a 4 if it's a die roll. But then if you're moving half, it would be a 3.5.
It's 3.5.
Yeah. And there's one other rule in there that it mentions specifically. I can't remember which rule that tells you it wants you to round down. I don't know what it connected to, but it wasn't in that rounding section.
I believe it was falling damage.
Yeah, I think that may be it. I just remember seeing it because it stuck out that, as that it was it, different.
The power from falling damage is power 2 for every full inch fallen. So if model falls 6¾ inches, rounding the total inches down, it would take a damage to a hit.
Okay.
So it's only full inches of falling damage that give you that add power to the falling damage.
That makes sense.
Okay. Just page 229.
Yeah, 229.
Killing it, Steve. Mm-hmm. Killing it. okay, I guess I got to do my list now anyway. My list I did enlightened. So my 750 list, I managed to, unless my math is horrific, come out exactly at 750. Mm-hmm. I have Eiffel with his awesome spider mech bot at 225. which he's pretty expensive, I guess, as bosses go. Mm-hmm. I've got Kyle the Black with him at 115. I've got the lucky number 13 with him at 75 points. I've got three Iron Horses at 60 points each. And then on two of those Iron Horses, I gave them Gatlin guns. So that added 30 points total. And then on one of them, I gave it Rocket Pods. So that added 25 points. And then I've got I've got three of the, I guess, Wave 2, the Abomination Hired Hands for Close Combat. That came out at 90 points. They're 30 points each. And then I've got one, because I had 10 points left over, I have one of the regular range Hired Hands. And looking at it, A, putting pretty models together, but B, trying to look at it as how I wanted it to work. Looking at Eiffel and what he can do and how powerful he is on his own, and he's even got like his army of one rule where as his models leave the table, if he's the last one left, he gains an additional AP every turn. It was more thinking, okay, what can I do to deliver Eiffel wherever I want him to go, because I want him to get in there and I want him to do awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got 13 in there as just general range support, because he's got his I think he's a rate of fire 3, I believe, if that's right, and then
four.
Is he four? Okay, he is four. That's right. And then he can throw out some shots if I need to play the range game, depending on what I'm up against. I've got my Iron Horses in there with the thinking that they can, between just being, they have their special rule. I don't remember if all the factions have it or if just they do, but the gunnet rule where they can just move and then gain +2 to their quickness.
All the Iron Horses have it.
So if I need to get anything across the board, if I need to get to an objective, if I just want to flank, whatever it may be, and then I've got the two of them with Gatlin guns for increased range support, and then I've got the one with rocket pods should I need to blast a hole in a building, or they've got a heavy support I need to deal with, or something with lots of armor, whatever it may be. And then the other contingent, I guess, is the Kyle Black, which we kind of said he can deal with things like heavy armor, but he's also got reanimation. And so I kind of thought, well, I have him and the little group of Hired Hands kind of moving around to either tie up enemy models, to pave the way if they need to mm-hmm. you know, whatever it may be, and he can kind of keep them active as time goes on, whether I'm needing to use the influence in my list, which is really only coming from Eiffel and him, to use on reanimation or whatever it may be. But really, I want to get Eiffel there and messing stuff up, because he's pretty crazy once he gets into combat. Plus, he's got good range, so.
Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of really good. He can come into. That's the one thing about between Eiffel and Kyle. That's a very strong close combat regime to get in there too. Like if you get Eiffel, you really don't want Eiffel to be able to just trudge his way into your army. You want to keep him back. You want to shoot him, and you want to do that. So if you have enough threat saturation in the coming at you, that you're either afraid to put yourself out there to take those shots, or that you're trying to actively use your movement to kind of keep the distance, you're gonna have to be you'll put yourself at a disadvantage against Eiffel, knowing that when he gets in there, he's armor 5 and he's just tearing it up.
And that's if I have to punch down the middle with Iron Horses to get him there, or maybe if I have to, maybe there's a lot of terrain and you've got a town set up and you've got to get it past the street, and the Iron Horses can loop around and create pinch points to where they can't really hide behind something normally, and they'd have to step out into the line of fire or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So I won't call it Godzilla, but it's very similar in the sense that I want to get my favorite models in there and make them do really cool stuff. So.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems very centric to close combat to me, the whole list in general, especially even with the, which would be the one thing that looks like you have really good ranged, is the Iron Horses. And they still are effective at close combat.
Right, yeah, if they need to. Yeah, if they need to get up there and do it. But I've got 13 in there just solely to be able to throw out, a range of shots. And then Eiffel himself he's got a range 18 power 8 with thermite rounds and stun on it, and he's got his web launcher, so
it's pretty centric around with range and melee, though it just seems to be I think this list can really do well in Melee. I mean, I think that's where
it's
going.
I'm a Melee Army kind of guy. I want
earn its money,
and just mess it up.
Per se. Yeah, it's going to do it. That list
if you really want to keep pushing that enlightened Melee, that's when you toss the Kaufman brothers in there, and then they're running around and causing a ruckus, and then you have, you know, and they're able to do it at somewhat of a sneaky way, too. So, like, as you build this list to a 1250, that's, you know, you can include those pieces like that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mainly want to make Eiffel scary, and I want to put him down and then give a reason for people to be afraid of him.
Yeah.
So.
Clay, why did you choose the Wave 2 Hired Hands instead of the Wave 1 for the close combat?
4+ physical.
4+ physical.
Speed.
Yeah. Speed. I like Speed. Him better. I mean, I don't want. Kyle can only reanimate, what, one model per. Is it one model? In its activation, or
yeah, one
action point.
Yeah. One disabled per action point.
Yeah, I looked at it and I thought, if I give him a horde, then I was worried about it opening up the possibility of them getting shot and blown up, mm-hmm. and hurting themselves and or Kyle, because he has to be in base-to-base reanimate anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I gave him too many, I didn't want him to have to keep up. You know, it's just, if there's so many of them that he can't keep up with it, then I'm just... I wasn't worried about having a high activation pool, like having a lot of models to move around. I wanted less models.
I'm just shooting those animation, or those abominations, and making them blow up on Kyle. That's my whole game plan against
you. That's fine, because while you're doing that, Eiffel is coming at you.
I know. It's probably going to work bad for me, but that's all I want to do.
Poor,
I just want to blow up those
poor
guys.
Kyle,
that range.
Poor Kyle is there to just be a speed bump. He's there to be in the way and make you have something else to worry about. And then the Iron Horses are similar in fashion, unless they've got to do specialty duty with rocket pods or whatever.
Yeah, he's the sleight of hand in your list. Yeah. He's the one that's just over here waving.
Everything is expendable except Eiffel. Everything is just, I'm just throwing it out there because Eiffel's got to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those, yeah, and those abominations have 2 armor too, which is crazy.
Yeah, with 7 lifeblood. I was looking at those. Those things are really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question, and I just noticed this, and it just came to me, Sean.
What's that?
I thought the most of the enlightened, like hired hands and whatnot, the recreated animations were powered by R12, or R12, that's
the
refrigerant. RJ-1027. I thought they were powered by that, so they don't have, they can't be interfered with, even though they are. Is that correct?
Or? So yeah, they aren't carrying the interference special rule that like the RJ bots have and that sort of thing, because they're not being outwardly powered in sort of the same way. So one thing that you'll notice about like the RJ the UR30 bots is you can see like their power source externally, and you can see that like, you know, where it would affect it. So, on the other hand, part of what the RJ is able to do to these bodies is that it's also reanimating that body in and of itself. So it's not able to be affected in the same way, because it still has that power of like life effectively, you know, effectively is that it's feeding off the life that the RJ is giving back to the corpse.
Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Things you guys will learn about RJ in the book, well, you'll just be like, okay, yeah. Because I mean, no, like
that makes good sense.
The two sections about enlightened are very interesting. I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
And 200 pages of fluff will definitely tell you a lot of these questions that you've been yearning for answers.
So our last one, you got a list as well, don't you, Sean? Did you?
I do have a list. So. Yeah. I wrote up a list for the Warrior Nation. I've been playing a lot of Warrior Nation. I've been breaking it and fixing it and doing a lot of that stuff. And I don't know, I've been doing that for all the factions. So they're all near and dear to my heart. Like one of the things too, is that in their own special way, each of these factions to us are like our kids. So you can't really pick like one that is our favorite, because there's things that we love about all of them. And we've put that time into each of these factions to like make them unique in their own way. Like they have things that make them tick, and things that they need to do to be successful, and things that do take away those successes too. And it's all about being able to use, you know, there's a lot of games, a lot of war games, especially where list building is very paramount. And one of the things that, you know, we've talked about a little bit here is that there's like competitiveness of lists, but I think in Wild West Exodus, what's cool is that list building, I think, takes a little bit lesser forefront than some other situations because of the tactical nature of activations in this game and the way that activations can be given and taken by your opponent too. Like if they choose not to make an activation on the side of the table that you have a power piece that you want to use, then that kind of opens you up for the ability of being able to potentially take that activation away from them or being able to activate in a way that you want to be productive and you didn't have one taken away from you. So list building isn't like the end all be all of everything about the game. It's that how you make that list work in the situations that you're put in the game. Anyway, so for my Warrior Nation list, I went with Sitting Bull as the boss. I definitely like Sitting Bull. I like Geronimo too. They're both very powerful. They just have different things that I think makes them very exciting to play, and I just felt that Sitting Bull would be a good one, especially since he's kind of like the starter boss and that sort of thing. And then Sky Spirit. Sitting Bull is $200 in the game. Sky Spirit is $145. And then Walks Looking for $80. Two Energy Beasts for $80 apiece. Four Scalper, the Wave 2 Close Combat. And then one Brave Close Combat. And basically, the idea with this list is that you've got a pretty mobile fire base in the way of having Sky Spirit and two Energy Beasts. You've got two powerful close combat pieces in Sitting Bull and Walks Looking. And then you've got, you know, four fairly powerful close combat pieces. And then, you know, another close combat kind of throwaway. But still, if he gets in there, he can cause some damage to you. So you have... You're able to play a bit of combined force, combined arms with this Warrior Nation list, while still having that sort of close combat lean towards it, which is kind of, you know, cross-factional in Warrior Nation, is that their hand-to-hand ability is very good, and they're fairly fast to get across the board, but still using highly mobile shooting pieces instead of falling for some of the lesser mobile shooting pieces. So it's more about using that mobility to gain board control and still force choices for the opponent.
Very cool.
So I'm kind of surprised you didn't take the crutch that everybody talks about, which is Stone Fist.
No. Yeah. And I, in a way, I specifically didn't include him. Because for the points that you would be paying for Stone Fist, yes, he's a very powerful piece. He's not a cheap piece in this faction at all. I mean, you're talking about 165 points, and especially in a 750-point list. In some ways, he's very justifiable because you can smoke bomb and you can give those sort of like clear places to get through. But then on the other side, you have the speed that's coming out of the army, and you're able to use that speed actually as an interesting in an interesting way of the fact of using that to actively seek cover and use that cover. So you're able to use that, you know, 8-inch movement on Sitting Bull, 7-inch movement on Walks Looking, 8-inch movement on Sky Spirit to get them into a cover position, and then use that second action to take cover and start boosting those armor values up. So you're able to run Sitting Bull into cover and then take cover, and now he's gone from armor 2 to armor 3. Put Walks in there, you know, she either needs to be in cover or she can go be somewhere and be in a situation where people just can't even see her. Sky Spirit as well, use that 8-inch movement to go get into cover and then take cover.
To get on top of a building where no one can touch him.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, just being in a situation where people just can't even see you.
And then he has that Sky Strike, or Hawk Strike.
Yep, Hawk Strike.
I love.
So he's able to grab people, move them around, and then they also all have that same ability that, you know, we talked a little bit about with Apache Kid of they all have a toolbox of ranged abilities. They're not dealing with like, well, I have to take this guy that has Gatling gun, or I have to take this guy that has the armor piercing shot. They all have that ability to pick and choose between those two things. So you've got three guys with spirit aim bows that are able to either take the rate of fire 3 power 7s or take that power 11 rate of fire 1 accurate armor piercing shot.
So anybody listening, now you know, if you want to win, then you take Warrior Nation and you use Sean's list. And then you're good to go, right? We know how that works now. We got your number, Sean.
Yeah, I look at that. That's a really, it's a solid list. Yeah. It does a lot. And it has answers for most. Looking at it, I mean, because even the spirit charge has armor piercing, which, again, not best against heavies, but can still work against heavies.
Mm-hmm.
Very mobile, all real fast. And that's why I like about Setting Bull, even though Geronimo is the figure that started me really loving the Warrior Nation. Setting Bull is just, he does so much, while Geronimo is pretty much isolated into focusing on, you know, melee exclusively. Mm-hmm. Setting Bull can do so much more. Yeah, I like it. I'm just looking at the models and the rules. Yeah,
I mean,
really like it.
Setting Bull, and I mean, one thing that I've always loved about Setting Bull, and this was, you know, this is one of those rules that I wanted to make sure worked in the right way, but also I love it, and that's his Wolf Blood ability. The fact that he can get in there into a group of hired hands, and as he's taking them out, he can use those hired hands and then take out other guys too. So, yeah. You know, he's coming in with his fangs, he's got 3 strikes. It's not as productive initially as the Razor Claws might be, but then on the same token, it can potentially be even better because it's not limited to just hired hands either. You could come in and I know in one playtest game, I think it was Loveless I killed, and then Loveless turned around and got to shoot some hired hands out. So it was like using the powerfulness of somebody else's army against them too.
Yeah. He has the expert climb too, which is just going back to some of my favorite things in this game of climbing and cinematic, the fact that he just automatically climbs. No test required. He just does it.
Yep. He just jumps on that wall and he's on top of the building, and then he's, you know, running and jumping building to building. So you can kind of think of that like, you know, what you think of as a werewolf type guy in a movie or something like that, where you're kind of like blur, you know, it's like a blurred vision that comes past you, and then you see it like on top of the roof and you're like, whoa. And there he is. He ran up on the roof, jumped building to building, and now you got to deal with that.
And have you seen Frenzy take that big a role?
See Frenzy take that big of a role?
Yeah.
I would, you know, it's a natural 10, right? So
yeah.
It's as much as you're going to see a natural 10, which is 10% of the time. You'll see it. I'm not sure. You know, some of these roles, even from the files that I use to put them on the website, we have made like very slight changes. So I don't know if you guys have seen the cap on Frenzy, but the Frenzy caps at 2.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to, you know, you can get some extra attacks, but you're only ever going to get 2 extra attacks per activation. So it's not going to be like an infinity loop where you just keep like, oh, here's another one. Oh, here's another one. Oh, here's another one. You can get some more, but you're not going to get an infinite amount more or anything like that. You know, one of the things, too, that you see with like that natural 10 sort of factor is it's getting a natural 10 for some guys, especially in the Warrior Nation, can just be outright scary, like deadly. You really don't want it to happen, and then you have to, like, you really have to push the mitigation of the damage that's coming out of them. So even if you are a faction that wants to use your influence to push your strengths even further, sometimes you have to use it for defense against the Warrior Nation because you just can't let damage get through. You know, like in the case of like Walks looking, if she gets a natural 10 on you and she's ignored your armor and she's got decap infected blades, every point of lifeblood that comes through is doing 4 damage. So you need to not let that go through.
That would
suck. Yeah, she's an assassin.
Yeah.
Wow.
But sure, I mean, she's got 0 armor and 10 lifeblood. So sometimes it's worth it to spend. Yeah, sometimes you need to send her in and go shoot that guy out, or, you know, shoot her down but you have to commit some guys to do it because you can't see her from more than 8 inches away. So you need to get in there and take that shot. And you know, that's where you have to make those choices that tactically may not look outwardly like the right thing to do. But if you, on the other hand, don't commit anything to killing walks looking and you let her get in against your boss or any power pieces, it's not going to be a good thing.
Wow. Well, that is a really, really strong list, Sean. Do you mind if we switch topics a little bit and have you talk about DualCon a bit?
Yeah. So here at DualCon, I mean, we're getting to the point where we are almost fully produced of everything. You know, like you guys have seen, the boat is getting loaded within the next week or so, and we've finally gotten all of our last, you know, kind of like pre-press versions of everything as far as all of the different box set sprues and resin models and all that. So we have the Kickstarter range here, so you can actually see, you know, you can pick it up and look at different models that are everything from the Kickstarter range, including like the Ladies of the West and all that. We've got all of our studio painted models here. We've got all of this. We've got, you know, like on display all of the sprues, including like the base inserts, the Wayward 8, the, you know, all those guys. We've got our three models that we've been selling, Mick Ironclad, Marshall McLean, Kyle the Black. We've got our beautiful Rob Hawkins table here at the show as well, so you can take a look at that. And we've got a nice little display set up on that, so we're able to show that off and see all the cool little intricate details that you maybe haven't seen of it. And then we're also running demos and, you know, playing games with people, getting people excited about it, and just, you know, overall getting these last few things. You know, like I said earlier, we got copies of the rule book. We got three copies of the hardcover, three copies of the softcover mini rule book, and we were able to show those off to everybody here at the show and get them in their hands and take a look at it. And it's really cool to kind of see it all come together and see all the pieces here. And then, you know, in the future, DualCon will start to become a little bit more of like, we'll have playable time for Wild West Exodus as far as like tournaments go and getting to just play games, you know, in the years to come. This DualCon is more about just getting that final bit of, you know, excitement, getting to see models, talk about these last releases, you know, these releases that are coming out in the next month or so, and then just see that whole Kickstarter range come to fruition, see all these plastics, see all these, you know, resin models, see all the little bits and pieces, you know, see that rule book, you know, see some of the cool dice. We have here at the show, we've got the red dice that you may have seen in different, you know, like some of the videos that we did and all that. Yeah. And we've also got the Union dice here. So those are kind of cool to show off. So those are the blue and white with the white lettering on them, or blue and silver with the white lettering on them. So those are pretty cool as well. Got the tokens, so you can kind of get the tokens in your hand. And, you know, we've been playing with them in the demo games too. So if you're a Gen Con, you got the chance to see our sort of like pre-production tokens. And here we've got those, and then we've got some of the ones that will be coming out as well. It's really the same setup. We changed the Halo templates a little bit. If you were at Gen Con, you saw that like wood grain texture, and we've changed that. So it's a little bit smoother texture. It's not quite as
grainy
sort of like it definitely turns out if you know, the wood grain ones, they turned out if you put black paint and like rubbed it in there, but now, you know, we're able to use these templates a little bit more without having to, you know, do post-production type stuff on them. And they've turned out great. They're, you know, it all looks good. And so, you know, this show is just kind of our last bit of like, here's the Kickstarter stuff before we release the Kickstarter. All, you know, all the Kickstarter stuff gets released, both for you, all the backers who are going to get it first, and then it'll come out, you know, for retail stores and via our pre-orders online and all that sort of stuff. And then you'll get to see all the Lawman stuff coming out soon. And then we've got a few more releases that are coming out this next month outside of just the Lawman, just the character created or sorry, the backer created characters like Sasha Tanner and Robert the Wraith Gunther, Marcus Cunningham. So
that's the month of October. Month of October is where you're outside of the Kickstarter releases, right? You've got
so our outside of the Kickstarter releases for the month of October are going to be Vladimir Ursul, White Buffalo, and and then the Jumper, Carl Fredrickson.
Okay, so now Vladimir Ursul, we saw some art. I believe it was on your Facebook. Man sniper for Enlightened.
Good old sniper dude. Okay,
we've seen Portal Jumper guy. Now give us a little. What's this White Buffalo? Let's get a little more detail. White Buffalo.
He's an underboss for the Warrior Nation. He's going to fill an interesting role. You'll see him as he comes out. We can't release too many details about it, but I'm sure in the next couple weeks you'll see a little bit more of his artwork and his, of his 3D model and all that stuff. He's very cool. Another guy that's kind of jockeying for a little bit more of a power position. In the Warrior Nation, he's definitely a strong, another strong melee presence that you'll see.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. He doesn't sound particularly sneaky to me. He sounds more like you should be afraid mm-hmm. of him. Get in your face.
Yeah, you will be afraid of him.
Very good. So you're continuing your releases are on a scale of something for every faction every month, or is it going to be like a couple factions maybe? Or
the overall plan is that every month you will see a new release for your faction.
Very cool.
It is not, so the way that we're going to do it is that it's not going to be like everybody gets a sidekick this month, everybody gets a boss next month, everybody gets a light support next month. What you'll see it do is it'll be rotating, but then when the year culminates, you'll see that your faction got one of everything, just as every other faction did.
Oh, okay.
So you'd be like, everybody this year got a light support, everybody this year got a sidekick, a new underboss, a boss, two or three bosses, underbosses or something like that. Just kind of depending on what we decide we want to do year by year, as far as the overall releases, but you'll see 12 releases for your faction per year.
Okay. So are you guys going to start expanding with more, or I should say more different types of hired hands like you did with the Wave 2 and Wave 1 version, or is that going to be something that's going to be a little slower on the process?
That'll be a little bit slower on the process, especially because of the nature of it. Like, we can release models on a faster rate of, like, the sidekicks, the underbosses, the bosses, because of the nature of manufacturing them, right? I mean, we're able to create that thing, cast it in resin, put out resin models relatively easy, but then to have it tooled up in metal, it's more months out in the first place. So even if we said we wanted to do it, it wouldn't be something where we'd be able to put it out, even once every 3 months. It would be something that would be a lot longer term, especially thinking about the idea of releasing more factions. Once a year is kind of the plan for that, is that over the next 5 years, 6 years, we'll be able to release all the rest of the factions.
Very cool.
And have it up to that full 10 faction game that we kind of envisioned from the beginning.
Okay. Has it been determined yet which faction is going to be next?
We have not solidified as far as the next factions, because the next faction to come out was the Lawmen, and they have come out. Well, they are coming out over the next month. And then from that, we will build the story as we build, as we kind of like see it come to place. And that's that will be the determining factor.
What so about any does other fanfare have something to do with it, or is it just going to be kind of more of in-house?
Sorry, what was that?
Does fanfare going to have more to do with what faction comes out next, or is it just going to be more in-house?
A little bit of both, right? We'll have what we're pushing through the story, through the novel series and the graphic novel series, that will help to give reason to kind of what's going on. If we're talking about something completely different and then like, oh yeah, here's this faction, then it won't make nearly as much sense. Then it's like, here's something that's coming up. in the graphic novel, and you'll see it happening, and then you'll be like, oh, you know, like, it'll make sense why it's coming out now, because there's a threat that's coming, or, you know, there's something that is obviously pertinent to why you would see these guys start to show up more in force to the situation.
But you've already got most of the, or at least based on what Romeo said in the past, I guess you've got a very good idea on lots of the characters and things already.
Right. We have, you know,
like you said, you had an initial 10 faction vision, so that means you've probably right. got you can kind of take the time to polish rather than have right. to struggle to develop something new.
Right. We're not trying to like come up with like who are these guys? Why are these guys here? You know, we know why they're going to be there, and it's just finding the right time to say like, here they are. You know, here's all the pieces, because, you know, same with like I was talking with the heavy support earlier, was that, you know, we want it to all come out together. And yeah. so we want a faction to come out as a full faction, and we don't want to be like, oh, here's just the boss.
Yeah.
Welcome to this new faction. Here's a boss, and you'll get a sidekick next month. We want it to be like with the Lawmen, where we were able to at least put out that starter with the Kickstarter. And then now that we've released it, we're coming out with at least a full, like, wave one.
Right.
You know, you're seeing light support, you're seeing heavy support, you're seeing hired hands, you're seeing underboss, boss, sidekick, and then even some multiple sidekicks. And just fulfilling a full faction. So as soon as it comes out, it can go to the table and at least have a decent amount of options and not be totally pigeonholed into just being like, well, this is the only thing I have released, especially with some of the factions that can use the mercenaries as well. Like, you'll have those that can carry over between a couple of different factions, and you'll right. find that they have strengths in the new factions that come out.
Very cool.
And then what's cool too is, so some of you guys have seen his character up on the website, and you know that you know of this mystical man, the Wraith, who has made a pretty cool model that'll be coming out, kind of like a badass, rough and tough, like don't mess with me utility belt sort of guy who's coming around. You know, he's going around the world of Wild West Exodus, and he is definitely wrecking his. Showing his power and wrecking some stuff. But we have Robert the Wraith Gunter here in Phoenix for DualCon as part of his pledge in the Kickstarter. So I will introduce him, and then he can talk a little bit about how his experience has been so far, maybe give you a little bit of insight into what he's gotten to see. So, awesome. Robert?
Excellent.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, buddy.
Great, Robert.
Good. Hey, Robert.
So are you a bit of a celebrity there? You get to strut around and be like, check me out. I'm a model on the table.
Well, you know, I don't really kind of rub it in. It's not kind of my thing to do that. But yeah, I'm really stoked when I can be like, hey, check out that sexy character. Look at that guy. And then I don't even say
rub it in, man.
You know?
Rub it in. Own it. I would. Yes, I would.
Scott
would
rub
that.
It in pretty hard. Yeah, Scott would do that.
I would. I'm sorry. I'm that guy.
But yeah, I mean, these guys have been superbly awesome. I mean, from the moment I showed up and they picked me up, I got to do all kinds of cool stuff last night. And I'm trying to get YouTube videos out there. I'm having some crazy technical difficulties with it, but once I can get it sorted, hopefully you guys will get to see what I've seen. And I'm trying to share what little side information I'm getting too.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. That's what we need. Give me some holy order information.
Your forum name?
I'm sorry, what?
You want to go ahead and give out your forum name or get you mind?
Well, I'm trying to get it up on the Wild West forum, the news and rumors. Look for it there. It's probably the best that I can say at the moment.
Very good. Once it's on there, too, we'll link it on our Facebook and stuff, too.
Awesome. I know I have it up right now, but it seems to not be working properly, so don't go. Don't
yeah, I clicked it. On your link, and it said private video.
Yeah, and I ran in the middle of this podcast back to the room, and I made it public, and it came back, and it's still showing private. I don't know what's going on, so.
Well, that's all right. So talk to us about DualCon.
You know, I didn't really bring anything to play in the DualCon, but it is very proactive. There's lots of players. They got lots of games going on. They have a definite corner set up for Wild West Exodus. It's amazing. I'm trying to get a lot of photos and videos of that as well. They got an entire section set up for Battle Foam, which is amazing. The hotel is really nice. I really don't know what else to say about it. It's an awesome thing. It's really great. If I could make it out to the one next year to play, I most definitely would, especially since the idea is they're going to have some actual Wild West tournaments going on next year.
So, Robert, share your thoughts on your character in the game, The Wraith.
You know, I really haven't got a chance to play test him yet, but he does lend back to a specific hero of mine that I've always been in love with for the longest time, and I really wanted to go with a guy that had the ability to deal with any situation that came along, the kind of guy that's seen it all, done it all, and the only thing that could scare him is something that no one else has seen before kind of guy. So in a sense, he really does have the ability to pack an armory and deal with any particular situation.
The guy seems to be a toolbox.
How did they approach about it? I was going to say, like, how did they approach you about it? Did they say, you know, what's your – did they have you give a general character overview, or did they say, do you want to make a certain – you know, do you want to make a melee guy or a range? Like, how did they approach you about it?
You know, it was pretty much, what do you want? How do you want to do it? What do you have in mind? And from there, I just went with it. I mean, I already kind of had it laid out in my mind way before the Kickstarter even quit.
Sure.
And honestly, one of the main reasons why I jumped into it was because the ability to be a comic book character I thought would be phenomenal for my kids.
Yeah, very cool.
You know, so that's part of why I did it.
That's understandable. Yeah. I got two little boys. I understand completely. I'd have done it myself if I could have.
Well, kudos for convincing your wife to allow you to do that.
Yeah. I paid a hefty price for that, and but I'm going to say, she very much knows. I'm going to go ahead and kick it on the podcast. You know, major shout out to my wife for being really supportive in this. She's always been good about supporting my dreams, and this is one of my dreams. I get to use the comic books as something that I can share with my kids and maybe pass down for a couple of generations. You know, and then I get to hear all kinds of more awesome stuff they're going to do with my character, because I'm going to say I'm real proud of the fact that on the forum, my character's done really well. Lots of people really dig my character.
He's awesome. And,
yeah.
It's an awesome model, awesome. Man. It's an awesome model.
Yeah, I can't wait to paint that thing.
And getting to choose your ammo every round is just incredibly useful.
Oh, it's phenomenal. And if I have my way before I leave, he'll have one more thing on there, too. We'll see how that pans out.
Well, I'm pushing for you, man. What do we need to do to make this happen for you, Robert?
We will lobby. We will lobby for you.
Really, it's just going to be a matter of playtesting. I'm hoping to get in an awesome game today with these guys, and hopefully I'll get in the first major Wild West Exodus battle report, and we'll throw that up on YouTube, too.
Very cool.
And I don't know. They've been really awesome, and I don't want to be the kind of guy that takes too much, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely. Oh, I agree. I understand that.
It's been great.
Thanks for sharing your experiences at DualCon. I can't wait to see those videos. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, post pictures too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm including them in the videos, all the pictures that I'm taking, and when I can figure out how to watermark them so that some of the sites don't try to steal my photos, I'll get them up. Absolutely. Just getting pictured out the forums.
So another question: are you going to start a YouTube channel?
You know, honestly, probably I will, because I've never done it before, and I've found that it's actually, short of the technical difficulties, remarkably easy. So I may start my own, and it'll work out pretty good, hopefully.
You should definitely get the channel put up on the forums so everyone can check it out.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I can't wait to see the videos myself. So. Awesome.
And then I kind of shared this a little bit this morning, but I want to say it on the podcast too. I got a little inside information, and I'm just going to share that we were talking about the Four Horsemen and a couple of characters from Tennessee. And, I put that out there because I'm from Tennessee, too.
Hell, yeah. So. That's what's up. Down with Kansas. Great. Down with you, Kansas. That's what I'm talking about. This is I'm buying a four-year model. That's my favorite now.
Why did you empower Clayton?
Yes,
why?
Empower Tennessee, man.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy.
And he gets to edit this, too, so we can't take that part out.
Oh, that's going
to
be in there. That's in there, Scott.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday we got to walk Robert through kind of the whole process too, of where it begins with a write-up for a character and then turns into conceptual artwork. Then that conceptual artwork, he got sent the versions of his character that he got to look at some of them and kind of pick what sort of vision he liked a bit better. And then it went, then it goes to that final concept artwork. Then it goes to our 3D sculptor, who then gets to, take that artwork, turn it into a three-dimensional object, pose it up, and then it gets cut back into pieces, 3D printed, turned into a master mold, And then we, you know, he got to make a cast of, you know, the current version of his character in that master mold, and then gets to take that home too.
That's awesome.
Treating your guys
such a pretty model.
But, you know, one thing too is while he's here, since, you know, we have made a version of his character, but we're going to let him make any changes he wants to and add any extra stuff onto that character now that he gets to, you know, interface with our 3D sculptor and actually, you know, talk a bit about that character and maybe make some modifications to the armor, you know, build of the body sort of stuff and any
parts. Ammo belt.
Ammo belt. Yeah.
Full 90s.
Just a big bandolero full of shells.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That would be awesome. Because it's already started, but it needs more. Needs more.
Because, I mean, we've gotten to a point where, like, you guys saw the 3D sculpt. We made a mold for it, and we did all that. But we haven't taken him to 100% production yet, so we still have the ability to make those tweaks. And we actually held off from going to production so we could wait until after this weekend to get that interface happening. So
very cool.
Yeah, I love his knee plates have that skull.
Yeah, and that's my favorite chest part. Plate. Is the knee
plates. And you guys will just have to sit there once you get the model and just try and find all the skulls. They're just little subliminal ones here and there.
Oh, this went very GW-esque.
Don't you bring Frank Castle down like that, sir.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
So well, I'm gonna ask real quick because I like to have feedback too. If I was to poll you guys on something you might like to see on him besides ammo belts, is there anything else you can think of?
Ooh.
Uh oh, put you on the spot.
We just crowdsourced this character.
You did. Way to stump us, sir. My vote's ammo belt. My vote is just ammo belts.
Yeah.
I don't think that's bad. I don't know. I really, really like the way he looks now. I won't say more skulls because I love the skull knee plates. I love his. I love the design of him in general. I don't know that I would necessarily change anything.
I mean, if I was going to change one thing, since he is, I mean, I guess I can say this: he is Frank Castle. maybe beefing him up to be a little more stout looking, because the Punisher is definitely, you know, a big boy. That would be my take.
Yeah, I actually brought that one up last night. I thought he was kind of skinny. So,
yeah, I mean, that would be another take that I would go with it is that, you know, he needs to just be a little more stout to be the Punisher. But, I mean, it's an amazing model. I mean, by far, it is one of my favorite models of the line right now that I like. So, because I just love the Punisher. Punisher's been one of my favorites.
Right now and get a good look at
him. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm just looking on him.
Trying to find him. Where are you finding him at? Where's a convenient place to look at?
The rule book under courage test.
I got him. No. I wanted the 3D model. I got him now.
Oh. Hold
him
up. Go to the
store. Either the Facebook, the store, or...
He's got skulls on his holsters. He's got skulls.
So there's a painted model in the rule book?
Not a painted model. There's the concept art in the rule book.
He's on.
Where is that again?
There's a full color art that'll be up on the YouTube video when I can make it work.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not that patient. I'm trying to find the art in the rule book.
It's not
sorry.
Rule book. Though, sorry.
Yeah. No, I don't know, man. He looks pretty hardcore.
I really like the model a lot. Yeah.
You give him decorated toe plates on his boots. He put skulls on his toes. But I don't know where else you'd put some skulls on. It would make any sense.
I honestly don't think I'll add more skulls to him.
Yeah, I don't think he needs it.
I don't like overplay skulls.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't overplay that.
Skulls.
I like the really subtle
dude. I heard you like skulls. Plates. So you put some skulls in your skulls.
Yeah, man. Put some skulls on his skull. Put some skulls in the eyes of the other skulls.
Okay.
On top of the skulls.
You guys are killing me.
All right, guys. Well, we've got to wrap up pretty soon because we got to head back down to DualCon and start.
Yeah,
MOs, we've got important fun stuff to do.
Is there anything else either of you would like to share about DualCon, Wild West, Exodus wise?
At this point, you know, we got DualCon going on. It's pretty awesome. It's like I said, it's kind of our last hurrah before all the Wild West or all the Kickstarter stuff comes out. So it's just going to turn into keeping everybody busy. Those of you that are interfacing with your retail shops, that is a program that is starting basically right now. the retail program as far as getting it into your shops. So that way, those of you that have backed it and have, you know, are going to start playing and want to get your friends into it and want to have a place to play and, you know, be stocked with Wild West Texas stuff, definitely talk to your local game store owners. And those of you that are local game store owners, you can give us, send us an email, check out the website, and we'll have our, we have our sales, sales email up there on the website, and just get started as far as getting that, that whole program worked out. And one of the things that's really awesome is we're going to be very supportive of the local game store, to get those places to play and to have very happy game store owners that want to carry our product. We'll be doing something that's kind of very unique for those stores, and you know, they'll find out as they get more interface with our sales department how awesome we'll be treating them and how well we'll be taking care of them as far as getting things in right when they release, even early, making sure that they feel comfortable having the product in the store, make sure they feel supportive both on the organized play aspect of it, and also just the general, like, in-game, you know, in-store support, getting cool advertisement posters and things like that.
All right, going to put you on the spot for just one more spoiler, Sean.
Anything. Just anything. Any spoiler that I can think of?
Give us something exciting that people are going to want to listen through the whole thing for.
Something exciting.
Preferably not Holy Order.
Preferably not Holy Order?
Because it's my favorite. Kidding. But there are two Tennessee people here, so I could swing the vote if I need to, if I need to request it.
Oh, man. I can tell you that the factions that we have currently in the game are all going to be getting a powerful new headquarter-esque model by the end of this year.
Hell yes.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
That's a great spoiler.
That's a good spoiler.
Okay, so what are they?
All right.
Never enough for Kansas. Never enough.
Don't hate.
But just remember that throughout the, you know, the next couple months, we will be putting out other cool stuff too. You'll see releases coming from us.
All right, great. Well, we'll let you go. Thank you for joining us, Sean, Robert.
Yep.
Thank you guys.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much.
And thanks everyone who stayed listening this long.
All right, guys. Well, you guys have a good day.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Robert. Yep. Congratulations, Robert.